Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, welcome back. Since we last talked, markets have rallied to new all-time highs on the back of hopes for a Fed rate cut, fueled not least by softer inflation, comments by the Secretary of Treasury, Scott Bessent, plus a solid earnings season. Meanwhile, President Trump has appointed Stephen Miron, chair of the Council of Economic Advisers, to fulfill the remaining days of Fed Governor Adriana Kugler's term. So maybe we can start by discussing what the latest appointment could mean for the Fed and for markets.
Well, that's a good starting point, Dan. Let's start there. I mean, clearly, Stephen Miron has a solid resume and all the policy leanings that are supported by the White House. He favors low interest rates, reforming the Fed system to give it less independence, restructuring the global trading system, and a weaker dollar via Mar-a-Lago Accord. He's pro-crypto, considers China the worst offender on trade, and believes tariffs are a key to reducing the budget deficit. But more important than who Miron is or where he came from is what he may represent. And that's probably a top-down effort to make the Fed put great again. Frankly, I think that's how he could soon find himself in a far more actionable job to impose Trump's will on short-term borrowing costs. His immediate task, it seems, will be to help slash interest rates early and often, as we've heard. And yet, while markets are already excited about the prospect of rate cuts, don't forget that last time the Fed cut rates by 100 basis points, that was just around a year ago, last September, the long bond yield, the 10-year yield, reversed that cut with a corresponding rise. So I guess investors should be careful what they wish for, because they may actually get it, and it may actually not be what they truly want. And meanwhile, as we discussed before, the administration would clearly like to bring back the Fed put, implement structural governance reform that the Fed and reintroduce some kind of yield curve control. And while markets normally like the Fed put, remember that the appointment of loyalists that the Fed has a mixed record. I recall Arthur Burns' stint as Fed chair between 1970 and 1978 wasn't such an easy time.
Well, Burkhard, apart from political pressure, inflation and the labor market will remain the key forces that shape its decision. How are key expectations on those areas shaping up?
Well, I'd say that inflation in the U.S. and actually globally is broadly moving in the right direction. It's losing steam, but it's still warm. Lower energy prices have helped a lot, while food services and durable goods still record some price increases. In the U.S., inflation has been stuck closer to 3%, we have to admit, than to 2%, the real target, and we feel it may be sticky there for a while. Having said that, we still believe in the resilience of the U.S. economy, as I've said many times before, and so the labor market as well, both of which we think are strong. There's also evidence, by the way, by analysts' positive net earnings revision. For example, the S&P 500's net earnings revision index turned positive this August for the first time in 11 months and jumped to 0.2% from minus 4.2% in July, and is now up from the 28-month low in May. And it's pretty much, I think, confirming our roaring 20 scenario and our, more importantly, our belief that we're in a big global bull market still.
Well, that's certainly good to hear, Burkhard, but aren't some investors asking themselves if it's too good to be true? I mean, we've had 6 months of geopolitical noise, a roller coaster on Wall Street, a fall in the dollar, and yet, if you had switched off the television back in January and avoided looking at your portfolio since then, you'd be none the wiser. So how is an investor to navigate in such turbulence?
Fair point. I guess keeping a cool head is always a good starting point. And remember that markets often shrug off messy geopolitics and crisis and what have you. I've always maintained that stock markets really only reflect two things. They reflect earnings and interest rates. And frankly, that's all there is. And the rest is psychology, which the seasoned investor should look through. And yet I'd make two caveats here. One, is about valuations. And I do acknowledge that valuations rarely drive short-term performance or markets. There is no beating around the bush that U.S. stocks charge a premium relative to the rest of the world, which nobody should take for granted. In fact, this premium is the exception to the historical norm. So, you know, with the U.S. stock market really being more than 70% of global market cap, while U.S. GDP is nominally less than a third of global GDP, the rest of the world really has a lot of room still to catch up, as we discussed a few times this year when we talked about the global rotation that we've been seeing. And then, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong here, but we still think that the S&P 500 can rally, maybe even to 7,500 points next year, which would be our bullish scenario for mid next year, July next year, and maybe to 10,000 points by the end of this decade, which, you know, would somehow tune nicely into the roaring 20s scenario. But we do think that global diversification has rarely been more important for U.S. investors than today. And that's because, one, the catch-up potential, and two, the soft dollar could really turn out to be multi-year themes, we think.
Well, Burkhard, you've rightly highlighted the weak dollar in our discussions before. How would you compare this year's dollar decline to previous declines?
Well, I think there are important parallels between today and, you know, the three big dollar declines that I recall clearly from history. Remember in 1971, that was the Nixon shock when Nixon ended the gold standard and the Bretton Woods system, which caused a four-year decline of the dollar until about 1975. Those days, U.S. Treasurer James Connolly famously told his surprised G6 counterparts at a G6 summit that the dollar is our currency, but it's your problem. That still resonates again these days. Then in 1985, the Plaza Accord, remember the Mar-a-Lago Accord that Stephen Miron wrote about, is named after this. It orchestrated a multi-year decline in the dollar as the White House administration sought to rebalance the then U.S. current account deficit. And again, that sounds very similar to what we're faced with today. And then the third period was after the global financial crisis, when the new Fed policy of quantitative easing, coupled with growing fiscal deficits to fight the recession, caused similar concerns by global investors compared to today and sent the dollar lower for longer, for a couple of years, 3 to 4 years. Now, as always, dollar movements create winners and losers. A weak dollar is a boon for U.S. exporters, global markets, and it can help the U.S. Treasury, but it can be a curse for U.S. consumers and savers, and that's precisely why we think global diversification and active management really are the choice of the day.
Well, Burkhard, as always, a very informative and thought-provoking conversation, and do, of course, as always, appreciate the guidance you offer to our listeners and clients when it comes to navigating markets and portfolio positioning. So thank you again, Burkhard, for your time today, and I do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Well, same here. Thanks for having me, Dan. As always, it's a great pleasure. And fingers crossed that things move well for the rest of this week and a couple of days next week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.